You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us an email. Send it on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn about all the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. This is, look how you guys were mouthing that as it's like I've said it before. I am joined, HB and Alex. It's been so, it's not since the Occupy Ken's Bed movement have you been on This Show Is So Gay.
True. I've missed it.
Have you?
Oh,
I haven't heard that in hours. Okay, so we are here tonight at the Trans Potluck, which is a monthly get-together.
Yeah, Queer and Trans Potluck.
Queer and Trans Potluck. And there's a nice group outside that's eating and eating some hot and spicy soup. Mm-hmm. It's very hot and spicy, as you guys are so hot and spicy.
Ooh!
So talk to us a little bit about who I know you both work together on it, but who wants to talk about putting together, why it was important to put together this potluck?
Oh, we didn't actually put it together. When Alex and I moved to town about a year ago, we were looking for gay things to come to that already were in Brattleboro, and we discovered this potluck was being put on by the men's program already. And so we started coming, and there were only a few people, and it was really great. And then we just invited anyone we knew, and then more people invited anyone that they knew. And
anyone within the queer and trans community.
Okay.
That's true.
Still maintaining the focus, but yeah. We came and were, as is happening kind of often, the youngest ones there, and kind of the organizers of the, like, under 40 crew. So it was exciting because there was already then this intergenerational aspect of the potluck, which was really fun and exciting to bring and be able to, like, talk about histories and talk about new things and kind of have that at every potluck was really excitable. So now it's been going, I think it's been going on for like 3 years, mm-hmm. I want to say. And it's morphed also out of a trans support group that then kind of took a step back in terms of being a support group and turned into the potluck. And then that kind of slowed down. And then it has been elevated again to the fabulous event that has been going on since we've been here.
Now, as 22-year-olds, how important is it for you guys to do the intergenerational work?
Who's 22?
Okay, I'm sorry. As 21-year-olds, how important is it for you guys to do this intergenerational work?
I love it, and I think it's one of the great things about living in Brattleboro. Like, when I was living in the city, you know, there were a lot of queer people around, but most of them were around my same age. And in Brattleboro, it's really amazing because it's not that way at all, and I really appreciate that. And I think it's just, like, totally different viewpoints and learning from each other and just, like, being excited about queer community in a totally different way.
Now, one of the things that we sometimes get emails about, and we might have talked about this before on the air, is, okay, so you're living in a really accepting place, and Vermont's so accepting, so why do you even need a designated space and time for queer and trans people to get together? We're so accepting here in Brattleboro. Why separate yourself from other community? You're leaning forward like you have an answer to that. No, but that's the feedback that we so often get, and I've gotten that in person here. Like, why have a gay night? Why do this? I mean, you're so accepted there. Maybe in a place where you can't be gay, sure, let's get together. But why in Vermont get together as queer and trans people?
Well, it's the only safe space to hate on straight folks.
Note to self, edit that later. No, I'm leaving that in. Okay, and for your real answer,
I think also, like, we just showed I was like, mine's not as funny as Fisher's. That happens so often. We just showed Small Town Gay Bar a few weeks ago to a great crew of all kinds of people. I don't know if everyone there was a homo, but it seemed like it.
I was.
Great, me too. And
not anymore, but I was.
In that movie, the people, like, one of the common things that people said all the time was like, yeah, it's just great. Like, it's really a place to, like, let loose. And I think that's, like, for me, like, it's just really fun and relaxing to have, like, queer, not, like, exclusive, but, like, queer-focused spaces. It's like you can, yeah, it's, like, accepting and whatever, and straight people will say nice things to you, but it's not, like, I feel like you can't be as, like, queeny if it's not, like, a gay space, or, like, as whatever you want to be.
Oh, nice. That's, do you agree with that, Alex?
I do. I was just thinking, you know, I think there's that whole, like, we accept you if you look like us and act like us and want to do the same things in your life as us. But as soon as, like, you step outside the gender binary, or you, like, question what it means to be a family, or what my gender is, or, like, you know, all that stuff, it becomes not as exciting, and not, like, folks aren't always as willing to engage in conversations in the general world. And so having a space where it's, like, just totally fine and accepting and understood that we are going to love you for exactly who you are and celebrate that and be excited by that. And I think, like, having specifically, like, queer and trans potluck acknowledges that it is different to walk around the world as a trans or genderqueer or gender variant person, and that folks that are accepting of, like, gay and lesbian community may not be as accepting or knowledgeable or, you know, in the know of language and how to respect people that are gender variant or trans. And so it's nice to have a space where one can assume that you're going to be respected, and if not, that, like, there'll be community education around that and you're not doing it all on your own.
Well, one of the themes for this week's show, look, we have amazing people on the show every week, you know, these people who have national reputations, and it's great. And I love doing that, and you get to talk to people I never dreamed I would have been able to speak to. But the theme of this week is really local, homegrown. And later on in the show, we're going to talk to some folks who are putting on the Brattleboro Women's Film Festival to benefit the Women's Freedom Center, which is an amazing organization here in Brattleboro, and try to give people examples of things that they can do in their community to create community. And one of the things that you two have done, I know in conjunction with other folks, is put together Homo Promo. And HP, you mentioned this movie night, which had a movie night a few weeks ago. I thought, all right, I'll go to the movie night. There'll be six or seven people there. And there were like, I counted. I think it was like 200 and, oh, okay, but it was like 35. No, but there were 35 people there. I'm like, who the hell? I didn't know who half the people in there were. And that was really cool. And I just kept thinking, gosh, this is something that, I mean, what, we showed it off of Netflix. I mean, we got the rights to the movie, and then we pressed play on Netflix. But that was something I couldn't stop thinking the whole time. Oh, anyone can do this in their community. And then I thought one of the coolest parts after, and I don't know if you heard this, right after the movie ended, the woman to my right stood up and said, I'm sure you did hear it, and said, where's our gay bar? Like, why don't we have a gay bar? Because we don't have that. And a lot of people in town here in Brattleboro say, oh, well, we don't need a gay bar because gay people can just go to any bar. And I just sit there and rebel against that because it's like, yeah, I want a gay bar. But anyway, bringing it back, what are things that people can do in their own community, grassroots, to get people together?
That's a big question.
You put together a movie night, and that wasn't, like, a crazy thing to do.
I mean, I think kind of, like, what I have been thinking about a lot lately is, like, okay, what things do I like to do in my everyday life, and how can I, like, make other people want to do that with me, or, like, how can I provide an opportunity for other people to do that with me? Like, I like going tubing down the river, so if I, like, make that a public event, then all kinds of queer people come, and we all go tubing down the river together. Or just, like, think about something that you like to do, and chances are really good that there's some other people in your town that you want to meet and hang out with that like to do the same thing as you.
Nice.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think what's really interesting for me is, after doing years of community organizing where it was, like, pulling teeth and trying to get people to come to things and, like, you should really care about this and come to this, was Homo Promo actually, like, came about by accident because HB and I, like, put on a show for a friend of ours that was traveling through town, and we're like, oh, I hope, like, 20 people come, and 70 people came to the show. It was sold out.
I went to that, didn't I?
Don't think so.
No, okay.
You missed it. It's fine.
You went to a different thing.
I did go to a thing. Okay.
The next. So what happened was,
remember when I was supportive?
Yes. We started putting, and then, like, right, someone else came into town, and we're like, we want those people to help us put on the show. And we're like, okay. And then we're like, oh, I guess we're doing this thing called putting on queer events, and to make it more accessible to people, let's not have it be that thing that HB and Fisher are doing. Let's have it be blank. Right. And that's why we kind of came up with Homo Promo. So I think even, like, to me, what that did was take it away from me and HB and our friend Mel, who started it, and made it more of a community thing, right? It's this kind of, like, vague, queer thing, and there's not as much ownership, which means that there's more community ownership over it.
Right. All right. That's something people can do. Should we send more people into the room?
Sure.
Tons more people to talk to. I'll let you guys get back to the hot and sour soup. Hey. Thank you.
By adoring fans is what I meant to say.
Yes. Email them. Cal, get in here. Hi, Cal. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Ken?
Is this your first time on this show, So Gay?
It's my first time on this show, So Gay.
It's very exciting. So tell everybody what brought you to the potluck tonight.
Alex and HB.
Yeah. And why is it important? What we were just talking about, you guys couldn't hear us, was why is it important to you to come to something like a queer and trans potluck? Because a lot of people around here say, oh, you don't need to come to that because Brattleboro's so accepting, and why would you want to separate yourself?
I really value, I guess, what I would call peer support.
Nice.
Which I've kind of been doing in sort of a mental health capacity for a long time, but mm-hmm. it's also making me realize that, like, I need support in a lot of different areas of my life, and someone can be an ally, and someone can be really accepting, and someone can try really hard to remember your pronoun, but, like, just, like, being with other people who kind of identify also as queer or, you know, are dealing with some of the same stuff is just really fortifying and uplifting and...
Oh, I love that the word fortifying is going to stick with me for a little bit. And so what is the importance to community for you?
Well, I also am really into, like, the idea of mutual aid. Mm. So, you know, I think that a lot of parts of our society are really, you know, geared toward being independent, you know, being self-reliant or, you know, whatever. And I don't know who can live like that.
Yeah, really. Not us. No, I can't.
I probably nobody, really, if you think about it. You know, we all need each other. And, yeah, there's things that I've tried to do on my own for a long time or just, you know, do with my partner for a long time. And at some point, you're just kind of like, if there were more people doing this with me, it would just be so much easier.
Yeah, we'd actually get so much more done and be smiling as we do it, which would be amazing. Well, the other question of the day is, what change would, this show is all about using your voice to create change. What change would you really like to see? We used to have on the show the magic, I forget what it was called now. It was such a monumental segment. I think it was the rainbow wand of change that we would wield. And what if we could just wave that rainbow wand of change, what change would you want to see? What would make your life better and the community's life better?
I mean, I always feel like space is an issue. And not always necessarily physical space, mm-hmm. But sort of like emotional and political space. Like if we just, either created more spaces where we felt safer, where we felt like we could just be ourselves, I don't know. I don't know what that looks like. I mean, sometimes we go to karaoke as like en masse, like queer takeover of yeah. like the karaoke night.
Well, I want to do that. What is that?
I went. Well, I only went once, but okay. It's that they do karaoke on Friday nights, like at a sort of like a bar that I wouldn't go into, like by myself or with like
right.
one person. Just because it's like sort of creepy and
yeah.
you know, just it's a whatever kind of a bar. But when a whole bunch of us go and just sort of like make it like a place that we want to be in,
yeah.
It's really transformative.
And then suddenly people are going to come back the next week for it. And they're going to be like, wait, what happened to gay night? That was awesome. All right. These are things people can do in their community.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, queer takeovers.
I mean, I was kind of like, oh, are people going to be hostile?
Right.
Everyone just seemed really gracious and loving our presence and
can we go now? Let's go now.
I think it's only on Fridays.
Okay.
And we came like wanting to sing a lot of grunge songs, and I think that's really how you like, I don't know, connect with people in a certain way is like through Pearl Jam and stuff. So.
That's like a patented theory now. This show's so gay.
You know,
I don't disagree with you.
Don't be threatened by my queerness. Like, I also love Stone Temple Pilots. Like, right. We're not that different.
Eddie Vedder, a bridge from the queer community to the straight community. That's going to be the new tagline for the show, yeah. Is so gay. So
he's going to probably want to do a fundraiser about that.
Who spoke in class today? Was it Jeremy? No, it was the queer community. I accept the message of that song. It's so disturbing.
And we're
wrapped
in a rainbow flag.
Oh, yeah. With flannel underneath. It's Pearl Jam. All right, you're going to keep doing... We can't talk about it on this week's show because we don't have that much time. You do pretty important work with housing. You're going to keep doing the work that you do with housing?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
People making a difference in this room out there. We went around the room, and there's a lot of people working on some important stuff, so it's good stuff. All right, so who's our next victim? Who's going to come? So one thing that I should have said at the start of this week's show is where we're sitting right now. It's we're not just at the Queer and Trans Potluck, but we're at the AIDS Project of Southern Vermont, and we have here two folks who are affiliated with the AIDS Project of Southern Vermont. First, we have...
Alex Potter.
And what do you do here at the AIDS Project?
I am an HIV prevention specialist, and specifically, I am co-coordinator of the men's program.
Fantastic. And...
I'm Tyga Christie, and I'm the other co-coordinator of the men's program.
New to the program?
Yes, very new. As
this
of
like your second hour. This is day four.
Fourth week.
There you go. Yeah. I was so close. So my assumption is that the AIDS Project in Southern Vermont has almost reached its purpose because no one else is getting infected, and there's no one left to treat because everyone has been cured, and nobody's going hungry.
It's so sad how wrong you are,
is that Ken. Right? I've never been wrong on this show before, so correct me.
Well, we still have a lot of issues with infections going on, which is extremely sad. And as I mentioned, we work for the men's program, and that's specifically doing HIV prevention with the gay and bisexual men's community here in Windham County. And unfortunately, in Vermont, as nationwide, gay and bisexual men are still the population that continues to be hardest hit. We do are very excited to see all of the medications doing as well as they are, people who can get on treatment. It's huge leaps and bounds, but we've still got people getting infected. And unfortunately, it's still a really hard disease to live with. Yeah. And even though people are living longer and better and healthier, it's a really harsh reality.
Yeah, it is. Now, you're going to be working. I'm just going to call you the intern. Is that okay?
Sure, why not?
Okay. You're going to be working. I just want that to stick. Just
okay.
So, yeah.
Oh,
that's so weird. So do I. So you are going to be working on programming as well, are you not? Particularly with the younger populations and bringing people together?
Yes, I'm working specifically mostly on programming for young men ages 18 to 35 in the gay and bisexual men's community.
And what challenges do we have there in getting folks together?
It's just harder in a rural area to connect with people who are in that age bracket.
Yeah.
So we're going to be trying to have a lot of really awesome events and getting people in and hanging out and building a bigger community of people that age.
All right, so we got to get people together and get people talking. Now, I have to say, I'm not sure if I've ever said this to you before, Alex, but when I first, so I run a peer education program at the college at which I work, of which you are an alum,
yes,
Marlboro College. Please apply. We need more students. So I run the peer education program there and brought you up, I feel like, the first time to talk about some trans issues. And then I figured, okay, well, we should probably do a presentation on HIV and AIDS. But I'm not sure if I told you this. I kind of scoffed in my head a little bit and thought, did I tell you this? I scoffed in my head a little bit and said, this is going to just be a little bit silly and a little bit trite because these are 18 to 22-year-olds, and they grew up in an age where they know about HIV and AIDS, and there's nothing that you're actually going to be able to say to them. It's going to be hokey and corny and very kind of – I don't know why I said Nancy Reagan. I know that's just they know, but I just figured it was just – it wasn't something that was going to resonate because they know it already. And of all the presentations, and I think there were 14 presentations, that was the one at the end of the semester that they said, oh my gosh, we learned so much. And it really floored me. It was really great and in some ways really disturbing to me. I wanted it to be more, we know, Alex.
That's a really good point. You know, my first reaction is, oh, that's wonderful that they learned a lot. I'm really glad to hear that it was a successful presentation. But it's alarming how many college-aged individuals I talk with these days who tell me, no, we didn't get any of this in high school health class.
Right.
And the amount of damage that has been done through abstinence only education to our sex education and STD prevention efforts in this country is intense. And I'm not saying that it isn't a great thing to talk with particularly high school students about maybe wanting to wait until you feel emotionally ready to engage in sex, but to say only abstinence only can be taught is turning out a lot of people who aren't informed.
Yeah, and I would assume, intern, that it's got to stick. Maybe testing is a bit important for folks.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that's almost the most basic piece is knowing your HIV status. And it's so easy. You can come in here for free, have results in as quick as 20 minutes.
No names.
And what's the website people can go to if they want to check out where there's testing in their area? Because people listen to this show from all over the world.
That's the Get Tested Vermont website. And if they all over the world.
All over the world.
I'm not sure right off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll edit that out. Yep. So folks, I mean, there are so many websites where you can just Google and see where you could get tested in your area. But
put in HIV testing plus where you live,
and you're going to find it.
Get resources.
Because then you will see, and there's different types of tests, and people can read up on the different types of tests. But I was floored by my college student population in the stats of how many students had never been tested before. And I figured, or it was, I guess, with our health survey, it was how many students had been tested. And I figured, do you have a guess? I think I might have even told you what the stat was, but I figured, all right, these are savvy 18 to 22 year olds. I figured, do you want to guess, intern? What percent had been tested? It's like a game show right here on this show.
Now I'm going to guess low based on what you've said.
Yeah, I know. I kind of ruined it.
I mean, 50 would be a low guess for 50? Me in an ideal world.
Did you say 50 or 15?
50.
50. But I'm guessing it's much lower.
Yeah. I figured it was actually going to be like 60% had been tested, and it was 28% had been tested had ever been tested. And of course, the number of students who reported engaging in sex without protection was much higher than 28%. So I was kind of floored. So people need to go get tested. And I have no problem outing myself, and you don't have to confirm this because I don't know that you're allowed to. But I've been here. I'm giving you permission. I've been here. I've been tested before, have I not? You can't say. So this is good. I wanted to prove to people that you could go into a place. They're not going to confirm anything. But I've been here, you know, and of course there's anxiety. Even if you haven't engaged in practices that you deem particularly unsafe, it can be 20 minutes of anxiety, but it's so worth it afterwards. Knowing your status is really the most safe that you can possibly be.
It's true that I sit with people in testing sessions who say to me, you know, I really was pretty sure that I had no risk. And, you know, I was really doing this because I'm entering a new relationship and I want to be able to say to my new boyfriend, I've been tested. As soon as that swab went into that vial and those 20 minutes started ticking off,
sweating,
the anxiety hit and went through the roof. And that's what I'm there for.
Yeah.
As the counselor and tester in the room, we know that even for people who feel that their risk was low and they're doing this as a matter of course, there's anxiety involved in this kind of testing.
What is the website that folks can go to learn more about the cool work that you guys are doing?
www.mensprogram.org.
Now, it's almost like the first time you said it. Now, the folks won't get that joke because they won't know. Now, should perhaps there be someone listening to the show who's thinking, well, the AIDS Project of Southern Vermont is flush with funds. They do not need any monetary assistance at all. To them, you would say,
things are very hard right now on a number of fronts, but primarily in the world of prevention. The CDC is making drastic cuts to funding for rural states based on low incidence. And there are some changes that the CDC are making that make sense. We understand why they're putting the money where they're putting it. It's just unfortunate that there isn't more money that can also help protect rural states, because we may be a small state, we may have a low incidence compared to a state with a much higher population, but we are part of the same statistics that say the highest rise in STDs are in our high school students.
Yeah.
And having an active STD is one of the risk factors for being at risk for HIV. So it's a rough time in prevention right now. The men's program funding is going to be drastically cut. We've got the rest of 2012.
Okay. All right. So if someone came in with a check intern, you wouldn't necessarily turn it away?
I don't think so.
Okay. Okay. So there's a way. Is there a way people can donate online?
There is a way they can donate online. And for that website, they could actually get to it through the men's program website, but it's easier to go directly to www.AIDSProjectSouthernVermont.org.
And we will list that on our website. You guys are going to keep doing the good work that you're doing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And someday you'll get a name?
Yep.
All right. Awesome. Thank you both.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, as you know, one of our favorite things to do here on the show Is So Gay is feature folks who are doing things in their local community to bring people together to talk about important issues. And one thing that you can do, no matter where you live, is put on a film festival. And it's a lot harder than I just made it sound. But right here in Brattleboro, Vermont, right here in southern Vermont, from March 9th through March 18th, we have the Women's Film Festival. And we want to take some time to talk about the Women's Film Festival. So I have two guests who are going to introduce themselves. We're going to talk about the films, stuff that you can do at home to bring people together in your community, and we're going to go from there. You guys are good with that?
Yeah.
They're good with that? All right, let's have you introduce yourselves.
Okay, I'm Lissa Weinman, and I'm on the steering committee of the film festival, which basically meets all year, and we kind of put it all together.
And I'm Suzanne DeCourcy, and I have screened 3 of the gay-themed films for this radio interview.
Fantastic. All right, let's start with you. Now, how did you become involved with the Women's Film Festival?
Well, the only man on the steering committee invited me to join when a few people left a couple of years ago, and he said, it's great, there's opportunity, it's fun to work on the festival, and I said, okay, I'll volunteer. Well, little did I know what I was getting myself into, because the film festival is an incredible amount of work. It doesn't just happen for those few days in March, or 10 days in March, actually.
You don't just press play.
No, we don't just press play. The work goes on all year round, the planning for the festival, and so it's quite a thing. And we're all volunteer run, 100% volunteer run, which is unheard of in the film festival community. So I got involved with a request from a friend, and I've been going strong ever since. And I love working on the festival. It's really great. It's one of the cornerstone events of this community, and it speaks in all its quirky weirdness to everything that's great about Brattleboro.
Fantastic. And Suzanne, this has been a family affair for you, has it not, being involved with the film festival?
Oh, this is true. My daughter followed in my footsteps, being on the selection committee. I moved here from Oklahoma in 2006, and the best and the fastest way I found to get it really into the heart of the community was to go onto the selection committee for the Women's Film Festival in 2006, and then I did that for 3 years. And yes, it is a great deal of work. It's a labor of love. At that time, and I think it's still pretty much the same, we would screen, you know, up to maybe 90 films. And it was about 15 hours a week for almost 3/4 of a year.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, really a lot of work. But the end result is, you know, what we see here in the brochure. And for a couple of years, I ran the art show with Jackie Abrams, and that was great fun, where we would invite people from the community to donate, because it's also a fundraiser for the Women's Freedom Center, pieces to the show, and it inevitably was very popular, opening with, you know, Gallery Walk weekend and all that, and, you know, coinciding for that month with the Women's Film Festival. And so now I'm simply here to discuss the films that have been chosen by the selection committee, which I have not had a chance to be on for a couple of years, but I really am pleased to be able to do this, yeah.
I'm still reeling from the amount of movie watching that goes into choosing these films. I'm overwhelmed. That's fantastic. So there were a lot of amazing films that didn't even make the cut.
Lots.
Lots.
Yeah, lots.
Okay.
It's really hard. And the scheduling is tricky, too. It's a real puzzle. And somehow, every year, it works out beautifully.
It always does. And how about that Women's Freedom Center?
Well, the Women's Freedom Center runs a shelter here in Brattleboro. And women and children fleeing situations of domestic violence, primarily that is what's happening when they come to the shelter seeking help, and the Women's Freedom Center is there. It was formerly known as the Women's Crisis Center, mm-hmm. so a lot of people still know it by that, but they made a decision about a year ago to call it the Freedom Center because they want to focus not just on the crisis, but on the empowerment that they try to bring to these women and kids that show up at the center to move forward with their lives. They give them job skills, there's child care provided. There's so many things that they do to get people back on their feet. And there's a whole educational effort around, and the film festival's part of that. I mean, the reason that the film festival was actually created was in response to a terrible murder that occurred 21 years ago of Judith Fournier Hart, who was a reporter at The Reformer and who was killed by an ex-lover who she was trying to leave at a gasoline station on Putney Road. So out of that violent episode, that murder, which was shocked the town was absolutely reeling, came a coming together of women to say, no, this kind of violence cannot be endured. We're going to try to celebrate the lives of women. We're going to put together a festival. We're going to not have her death be in vain. We're going to use it as a way to create art. So out of the grief and all of the violence actually comes this film festival, which has just grown year after year. Last year was the 20th anniversary. It's the second oldest women's film festival in the country.
I had no idea.
Yes. In fact, it's even really unique because we will accept films that are by men. And no other women's film festival accepts films by men. They're all just films by women, whether or not the film is about women. Right. Our film festival is unique in that it's a women's film festival, and regardless, we prefer films made by women, but we will accept films by men if they have strong women protagonists, because really only 12% of the films shown in theaters around the country feature women protagonists. 12%, even though we're 51% of the population. So the film festival is a necessary thing because we only focus on stories about women and girls wherever they happen to be. And those struggles of women and girls are universal. They're not just unique to women. But we need to see more women. We need to see their stories, and that's the role that the film festival plays.
The second oldest in the country. What's the first oldest? Do we know?
It's the Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival, and it's only 2 years older than ours.
We're better than them.
Well, we're, you know.
Wait, it's not a competition, Suzanne. Stop competing. They're to my right.
The oldest in New England.
There you go. That's a good thing. All right, well, we got to, can we talk about the movies? Let's talk about some of these movies. This is so exciting. We're doing such a Ebert and Roper and thumbs up and thumbs down. But it's thumbs up for all of them, right?
Yeah,
there are no thumbs. Yeah, there are no thumbs down for any of these movies. Where do we want to start? Let's start with, what about Tomboy? Did you watch Tomboy? Did you not?
I watched Tomboy, and
so we should say Tomboy is a 2011 film from France. It is subtitled. It's a drama.
Right.
What did you think about Tomboy, Suzanne?
I think that Tomboy is something that the gay community in general will be able to relate to because it follows the introduction into a new community of a very tight-knit and loving family, and there's a couple of little girls. One is a 10-year-old, and as she makes her way into, you know, the new kid on the block dynamics with her playmates, mm-hmm. which are mostly mostly little boys with whom she plays soccer and this, and gets kind of a crush on a little girl, also, you know, the same age, and almost accidentally ends up passing as a boy. The entire film, I have to say, is extremely realistic. You know, there was never a moment when you sort of snap out and say, oh, this is contrived, or this is, you're trying to make a point. It's actually something that could happen, and for some of us has come pretty close to happening. As children, when we start moving through different gender identity explorations as the sexuality is developing. And the tension that builds as the little girl gets deeper and deeper into this misconstrued identity, because she's experimenting, she's not sure where it's going, and she's extremely successful in what she does. But then, of course, I won't give the end away, but it has a pretty dramatic climax to it.
Now, this is a French movie. Do you think this is a movie that would get made here in the U.S.?
Oh,
gosh. Yay for France. Yes. Yay for France. We can bring movies in. They don't need to be made here. This is good for the Women's Film Festival. All right. Did you see Tomboy as well?
I saw Tomboy. I love Tomboy. Tomboy is a beautiful film, and you go into the heart of this family. And I mean, I felt quite consciously the little girl was trying to be a boy. It was, for me, it wasn't as abstract as Suzanne was describing. Mm-hmm. There's a scene where she falls in love with another little girl, and she really postures as a boy from the beginning. She hides the posturing from her family. Her family has no idea that she's presenting herself as a boy with a boy's name. So nobody knows that she's a girl in the neighborhood. They just think it's a new. And a love affair develops between her and this other little girl. So it's really dramatic at the end because sort of everything hits the fan.
Right.
And there's one scene I found particularly poignant, which is a scene where the little girl has to go swimming. She's invited to go swimming, and she doesn't know what she's going to wear to go swimming with the other children. And she actually goes to great lengths to appear as a boy. I'll leave it at that. But the whole scene is just fascinating. No, it would not be made in the United States because it's handled with such a deft hand, and it's just so normal what's going on. The family, there's no histrionics. I think the message of the film overall is it doesn't matter whether you're a boy or a girl if people love you. And if your family loves you, you know, she's given the room to have this exploration and also to deal with the ramifications of the exploration. And we're privy to that in a very intimate way. So I think the film is absolutely a must-see. It's been on the festival circuit. It's having a great run. People love it.
All right. That is I want to go see Tomboy. Is there an opportunity to do talkbacks after the film? Because this is great. We get to talk about the films and see them from different angles.
Yeah. Many of the films have Q&As following them. Right. There's not one planned for Tomboy, but often one of our volunteers will get up and say, what'd you think of the film? And we'll have a little audience discussion, because I think Suzanne would agree one of the spectacular things about the Women's Film Festival are the audiences. The audiences are curious, engaged, vocal. It's so much fun to be in the audience. I mean, anybody could sit there and watch Netflix on your computer screen at home. But really what the festival does is bring people together and foster these kinds of discussions.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. All right, where do you want to take us next, Suzanne? What movie should we go to next?
Let's go to the one that is paired with Tomboy.
Okay.
Which is transgendered film theme, and it's a short, 15-minute short called I Am a Girl.
Okay.
And it's from the Netherlands. And it has a kind of a similar plot in that this is a documentary rather than a drama. We're actually watching sort of in a day-to-day time frame what it's like in the life of a 13-year-old child who is actually in the process of possibly transitioning to the extent that she's actually taking drugs to inhibit the onset of male puberty. Am I right? Do I remember right?
I
yeah. Oh, okay. And the girlfriends that she hangs out with, the fellow 13-year-olds, are, I guess, what you might call a very femmy, girly bunch.
And a very lipstick crowd, some would say.
Very lipstick crowd, with a lot of primping and kind of gossiping going on. And the primary problem that our young protagonist is dealing with is she's got a crush on a boy. How is she going to convey to him that things are not necessarily what they seem if things get a little more serious?
This is all in a 15-minute short.
It's like Tomboy. It is beautifully done. It's, you know, it's visually sensual. Even though it, you know, it's a documentary, it still has that same kind of depth and ease with the day-to-day reality of what these children are living.
All right.
Now this one.
Check that one out. I can't find it on the brochure. I'm looking right now. That's okay.
Okay. this one raised a lot of issues for me, especially when comparing it to other films in the festival, such as Misrepresentation, dealing with images of women and how that affects their place in society. The idea that, again, you know, almost in an opposite direction on a spectrum of trying out the identity of sort of uber feminism, what this crowd of girls does, it sometimes made me a little bit uncomfortable, because it's almost like moving into what feminists from a previous age might have called objectification of the images that girls take on according to what they think is the best way to get their image across to society as desirable. And so I was squirming a little bit with that theme.
In a 15-minute Dutch film, look at everything that this did in 15. All right. It's a good pairing.
The shorts do that. They really do. They're powerful. You know, we love the shorts because they often, like, just hit you right between the eyes.
Love it. All right. All right, so we're going to have to check that one out, and that's going to be paired with Tomboy.
That's right.
Okay.
I want to say when that's playing.
And yes, so we have I Am a Girl is playing March 9th at 8:45 p.m. in the Latches Theater, and March 14th at 6:30 p.m. in the Latches Theater. And Tomboy, which we already discussed, is the same thing, March 9th and March 14th. March 9th at 8:40. Oh, so exciting.
Yeah, so that's playing right after the Carol Channing film, actually.
Let me say, now neither, none of us in the room, we weren't even going to, you just said the magic words.
That's the opener.
Now, this is radio, so can you, so people can't see me, but can you two attest the fact that when you say Carol Channing, I light up?
Yes.
Okay, because I light up. I love Carol. So Carol Channing, Larger Than Life, is a U.S. 2012 documentary, and it's all about, she's 90 years old.
She is, but she's full of life.
She is full of life. So that is on opening night, March 9th, 6:30 p.m. at the Lashes. I definitely want to see that. So that's what I would call gay adjacent.
Yeah,
Carol Channing is definitely a gay hero. She is gay adjacent, as any, I think she's more than gay adjacent. Any drag queen has got to have their Carol Channing down, or there's really no point. It's really no point. I'm going to get angry emails about that.
And I just want to mention that Jerry Stockman from the New England Youth Theater used to work with Carol Channing, and he's going to be introducing the film and leading a Q&A following. So we'll get his insight into the real lady as well.
Oh, it's very exciting. And there was one more, right? There was one more LGBT-related film.
That's right. Let's define this one as lesbian.
Let's do it.
All right.
Fine with that.
We try to get rid of definitions.
Yes. It's called This Show Is So Gay. We love the labels. We embrace them.
All right. This one is called Wish Me Away. It's 120 minutes, USA. And it is about the country music singer from Wellsville, Kansas, Shelley Wright.
Shelley Wright, who we have talked about many times in the show. Big coming out story in the country music world.
Well, this puts it all together.
Does it?
Yes. It is a very well-made film, which I think is fair and honest, which takes into account the culture from which she has emerged and the rise of the two conflicting impulses in her life. One, from right off the bat in early childhood, to become a famous country singer. Two, the rise of her sexual orientation.
Yeah.
And how through the years, as this is sort of a retrospective, looking back, and bringing all of the elements together, how she deals with it. And as one rises, her fame and her talent, so does the propensity for even unto suicide thoughts.
Mm.
And so the film actually opens in a bookstore signing. Her book has come out, called Like Me, and she's talking to the crowd of people in the bookstore, and she explains to them that from the third grade, every morning she would wake up and she would pray, saying, "Please God, don't let me be gay."
Wow.
Right up until things started getting a little bit more complicated. When love and attraction, of course, reared its head. So, even though the film is contemporary, and we here in southern Vermont might think that a lot of this is past history, this kind of homophobia.
Not a chance. No way. This is why she was on Oprah, because it was such. This was such a big coming out story to be coming out in the country music world. It got her right on Oprah, and her PR agent Howard Bragman was on the show last year talking about it. Very big deal in that scene to be gay.
Uh huh. I think betrayal is a main theme that goes through this, because her choice comes down to who to betray. If it's her fans, who are legion and absolutely adore her and are so proud of her, including, you know, her hometown and the family, it would be a betrayal to come out. Or is she going to betray herself by not doing it? And it's a struggle that many, many, many people have had to deal with as well. And so it's going to be poignant in that way, too.
So that is Wish Me Away. That's on March 14th at 8:45. p.m. at the Latches Theater, and March 18th at 6:30 p.m. at the New England Youth Theater. So we have two types of people who could potentially be listening to this week's podcast. We have the people in Brattleboro, and the people in Brattleboro in the surrounding area, they need to just be going to the film festival, correct?
They have to go to the film
they
festival.
They have to. It's mandated. We mandate that on this show. We can do that.
You know, it's 27 films over 10 days. There's really something for everyone. We have an opening night preview at Gallery Walk on March 2nd, this Friday, and we'll be showing a loop of all of the films so people get a chance. And we're also doing a women's art show that will be opening that evening at the Catherine Dianich Gallery. So, you know, you'll be able to see the films. We have a supplement coming out in the Commons this week as well. 20-some-odd pages devoted to the Women's Film Festival. So take a look at that supplement that has all the films listed, overviews of a lot of the films. That's going to be a real resource for people. So make sure you look at the Commons this week because our supplement is in there. I think the main theme that sort of ties everything together for everyone in the film festival is the sense of the everyone's unique story. And the reason that we focus on women characters, you know, is because each woman, and just like everyone, is just slightly different, has a slightly outsider cast to each of the films. So each of the protagonists sort of dealing with issues that are difficult, mm-hmm. and rising to the occasion. That is generally a theme that we see in the Women's Film Festival. So, you know, there really is something for everyone at the festival. I want to mention a film called Raising Renee. I don't know if Suzanne got a chance to see that one. That is a documentary about the African-American artist Beverly McIver, who promised her mother on her deathbed that she would take care of her disabled sister for the rest of her life. Now, Beverly McIver is a very successful artist, and at the moment that this film took place, she really was starting to hit her stride with her art, becoming noticed. Her career was taking off. At the same moment, her mother died and her sister fell into her lap. So I think a lot of members of the gay and lesbian community, like all of us, struggle with these issues of caregiving.
Absolutely.
And what happens when, you know, a parent is aging and you're a caring person and you want to care for someone, you love them, but at the same time you have your own creativity to express, your own life to live. And that film really deals beautifully with that issue. And I think that would probably also be of great interest to the community at large.
Great. And then, Suzanne, we have people outside of the Brattleboro community. So say there are people in Oklahoma, say they're in Scotland, no matter where they are, who don't have access to the film festival. What message do we have for folks out there who are looking for this type of content?
That it is possible. This is really ground roots. And the team that comes together in this labor of love to produce this astonishing festival, we can do it here. It can be done anywhere.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Now, can we promise people that on March 9th that Carol Channing will be there?
No, unfortunately, she's not going to be present, but she'll be there in spirit. She'll be there on the
I'm
big
turning
screen.
To my right. Suzanne, is it possible that Carol Channing will be there?
This is beyond my ken.
All right.
There
just
might be
saying.
An impersonator or two that shows up.
That would be enough. There's not enough drag here in the Brattleboro-Marlboro area.
Let me ask you that then. Is it possible that a Carol Channing might show up?
Oh. That's an invitation to the audience.
Yes, certainly not to the host, because I can say there is not a chance that that's going to happen. But it doesn't mean that I don't still want to go see the movie.
I think you'd look good as a blonde. I don't know.
And on that note, all right, so now where do we go for more information? Tell everyone where we go for more information.
Our website's got it all the trailers, all the information about special events, and it's www.womensfilmfestival.com. .org.
I was thinking before that it's quite impressive that we got that domain name.
Exactly. Well, that's because we've been around one of the longest film festivals in the country devoted to films about women.
One could argue New England's longest running. Yeah. Just try to give us some sort of title.
It's definitely the longest running women's film festival in New England. There's no question about that. And in one of the longest running in the world. Let's go even wider. In the universe. It's one of the longest running women's film festivals in the universe.
And is Carol Channing showing up at that Rocky Mountain one? No, I don't think so. I can't wait till the press release tomorrow. Ken said that Carol Channing's going to be there, then everyone's going to be running. I'll do whatever I can for you. And the proceeds do indeed go to the Women's Freedom Center, which is really, really important. And I do want to mention, you do work with a faith-based organization that is partnering up this year with the film festival.
That's right. I'm the church administrator in All Souls Church Unitarian Universalist. And we are co-sponsoring one of the showcase films, which is called Misrepresentation. And we have the details of its...
Yes. So that one is a U.S. film. It's a documentary interviewing Nancy Pelosi, Katie Couric, Rachel Maddow, oh, hello, gay adjacent, Jane Fonda, and many more highlight the exploration of how the media's misrepresentation of women has led to the underrepresentation of women in positions of power and influence. That's going to be a pretty important film.
That's a hot film right now.
Yeah.
That's hot nationally. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's heard of it. And, you know, it's the film festival premiere here in Brattleboro.
Oh, I had no idea. Yeah. But it's so important to put out there that, of course, you can partner up with a faith-based organization. You can partner up with a college. There's any number of people in the community who are looking to partner up to put events like this in progress.
That's right. The Justice Center?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
The and Justice Center and Key Bank and New England Youth Theater and the Cates Foundation, the Commons, tons and tons of organizations. So it's not to say that this isn't perhaps a little bit of work. To put it together, it's perhaps a little bit of work, but it can be done.
It can be done. And, you know, if you love films and you get a group of people together that love films too, you troll the festivals, it's a great way to come together to talk about films and then put on something that's going to benefit the community.
Love it. Love it. All right. Suzanne, Lissa, I'll see you at the movies.
Thank you so much, Ken.
Yes, thanks very much.
All right. Thank you both.
To do, I finally heard from you. Your voice is clear as yesterday. Last time your voice lacked hope, but I felt it with my own. Now my debt is begging to be paid.
All right, folks, so get out there, go do some incredible things, organize a potluck, show some movies in your town, and while you're doing all these great things, remember, why be gay when you can be...
So gay!
That was the best ever.
When I'm the letter by your choice, but I hear the waiver in your voice. Expect the worst, but if I'm your habit, you're my curse. Down. You push your dreams on me, and when I reach out invitingly, you go to slap away my hand. And what is it you say when you talk? 'Cause I feel it every time I walk, and I'm losing more and more to stand on. Just be me waiting in vain. It's too easy to remember how I felt, though I hid underneath myself. And I'm not one to expect the worst, if I'm your habit. Today.